All right, good evening, everybody. I'm going to call the August 20th, 2024 regular meeting of the Ulster County Legislature to order. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance led by Eagle Scout Jonathan McNamara from the Boy Scout Troop 8 of Salkill. Jonathan, I'm going to welcome you up. Please, everybody, have a seat. I'm going to welcome you up to join us at the podium. And I'd like to also invite legislator Jason Kovacs to the podium to present a Pride of Ulster County Award to Jonathan in recognition of his newly accredited Eagle Scout ranking. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your continuing support of the Boy Scouts of America and for allowing me to make this presentation this evening. Jonathan, as an Eagle Scout myself, it is an honor and privilege to be able to bestow the Pride of Ulster County Award to you for your recent elevation to the rank of Eagle Scout as a member of Troop 8 of Salkill, chartered by the Salkill Fire Company. The multi-year journey to the Eagle Scout Award is one of the most involved and transformative experiences a young man can have. While the community service project required for the rank of Eagle is perhaps the most recognized of all the Eagle requirements, equally as important is the years of commitment and perseverance that are required, the scout skills that are learned, and the friendships that are made. Few scouts reach the rank of Eagle because not every scout has the determination and drive to commit to reach a goal that can be several years away. I had the great privilege to attend Jonathan's Eagle Scout Court of Honor earlier this month. The Court of Honor was held at Camp Shiwakamano, a YMCA camp located in Shokan, which was the site of Jonathan's Eagle Scout project. For his project, Jonathan led the development and construction of 7 wooden docks to be used at the waterfront of Camp Shiwakamano. Jonathan attended Camp Shiwakamano when he was younger, and this was his way to give back to a camp and an organization that has helped him shape him as the young man he is today. Jonathan, I note that there are several adult leaders from Troop A with you today, Tim Mitzel and Andrew Clearwater, Assistant Scoutmasters. We thank these leaders for giving so much of their time and talent as volunteers to you and your fellow scouts. I've heard this commitment can be at least several hours a week or more. Boy Scout troops would not exist without these volunteers, so thank you, gentlemen. Also, I'd like to acknowledge Jonathan's mother, Laura McNamara. Behind every Eagle Scout is an Eagle Scout mother who was and is so instrumental on her son's trail to Eagle. Thank you, Laura. Jonathan, you are a role model for younger scouts and all those who are younger than you. We congratulate you on your achievement of the rank of Eagle Scout, and we wish you all the best. We know you will continue to make Ulster County proud.
Jonathan, why don't you give us a few words about your project and how that was as an experience for you.
Hi, good evening, everyone. I'd first like to say that when I first wanted to do an Eagle project, the first thing that came to my mind was I didn't want just the title of it. I wanted the experience, and I wanted the opportunity to grow and go through those struggles and growing pains in order to become the best Eagle Scout that I could have been. So, as I have grown up through the YMCA program, whether it's been Camp Shiwakamano or just basketball and swimming up at the YMCA, I knew that they have raised me and made me become the like person I am today. So I thought I had to give back to them, and I thought that would be the best thing that I could do. So when they came to me asking for the building of the docks, I was like, this must be perfect. It probably isn't going to be that hard. I was wrong. So I think the biggest thing that came out of this was how I grew to be a person. Because when I first thought, I was like, oh, I knew all these things. I'm a good leader, and I knew what I was going to do, and it was going to be a piece of cake. And I think the way that I was humbled in a positive way was what helped me grow. Because there, I finally learned that I do not know everything, and there's much more people that can – I can just simply ask questions, and they're not going to judge me for it. So when that time came to do all these different things, of course, problems were going to come up, lots of problems. But as those problems came, I eventually learned to look towards people that knew what they were doing, and I finally – kind of understood what it was like to mentorship, kind of just learning how it all works. But yeah, I mean, very long process, but I eventually came out on top in the end, and I have to say I would happily do it all over again just because of the growing experience. Thank you.
That's great. Congratulations. Mom, come on up. Leaders, come on up. Do a picture. Hang on, we're going to move the podium here. Could somebody grab the podium and move it out of the way? Thank you. There you go. Congratulations. It is with gratitude and humility that I acknowledge that we are gathering on the ancestral homelands of the Mohican, Munsee Lenape, and Skaticook people, who are the indigenous peoples of Ulster County. To learn more about these tribes, past and present, please visit links available through our QR code. Tomorrow, Wednesday, August 21st, is National Senior Citizens Day. In 1988, President Ronald Reagan proclaimed August 21st as National Senior Citizens Day, a day to recognize and show appreciation for the value and contribution of seniors to the family and to society and as a whole. In the proclamation, he said, "We owe older citizens our thanks and a heartfelt salute. We can best demonstrate our gratitude and esteem by making sure that our communities are good places in which to mature and grow older, places in which older people can participate to the fullest and can find the encouragement, acceptance, assistance, and services they need." I'd like to thank our guests from Woodland Pond in New Paltz. Give us a wave, everyone, from Woodland Pond. They're joining us tonight for this celebration. Thank you so much for being here tonight. We really appreciate you coming out and joining us this evening. Now I'd like to call on Clerk Fabella to read the announcements and call the roll.
Announcements. Fire evacuation plan. Please note that in the event of an emergency, the fire department has requested that legislators and all others move at least one block away from the county office building in order not to impede the firefighters in their duties. Cell phones, please silence cell phones for the duration of the public hearing and of session. Microphones, please be reminded to use your microphone when speaking so that you are recorded for the official record. Roll call, Clinton, Collins,
present.
Corcoran,
here.
Criswell,
here.
Donaldson,
here.
Gavaris,
present.
Green,
here.
Hansett,
here.
Harmon,
here.
Hewitt,
here.
Kitchen. Kitchen, are we here? And he is not. I will say, unfortunately for him, it means he's not here. Kovacs.
Here.
Levine.
Here.
Litz.
Here.
Lopez. Maloney.
Here.
McCullough.
Here.
Nolan.
Here.
Roberts.
I am here.
Sperry.
Here.
Stewart. Uchitel.
Here.
And Walls.
Here.
So because Legislator Kitchen is not there for me to ask again if he's there, we're going to go with a no, and we're going to go with 19 present and 4 absent.
Can somebody text him and tell him to unmute and let us know that he is there. Is that fine with you, Clerk?
Well, of course. My staff has started doing that.
Thank you.
3 minutes ago.
Excellent. Thank you. We'll get him here. Tonight we have one public hearing. Clerk Fabella, can you call the hearing to order?
Absolutely. Tonight's public hearing is on proposed local law number 7 of 2024, a local law to allow enrolled volunteer firefighters and volunteer ambulance workers to be eligible for a real property tax exemption under real property tax law.
And do we have anyone signed up to speak this evening?
We do not.
Is there anybody present who would like to speak on this subject? Anybody present who would like to speak on this subject? And a third call? Seeing none, I call for a motion to adjourn the public hearing.
Mr. Chairman, I will make a motion to close the public hearing.
And a second, please. Legislator Collins, all in favor? Any opposed? Public hearing is closed. I'd like to now announce the birthdays for the month. Deputy Clerk and Legislative Financial Analyst Amber Feaster, August 10th. Where's Amber? Hi, Amber. Chair Peter Criswell, August 13th. It's my birthday. Legislative Administrative Assistant Lizvette Boss, August 21st. And in the back there, Legislator Joe Donaldson, August 29th. Congratulations, everyone. I ask for a motion to dispense with the reading of the previous meeting minutes.
Motion.
Yes. And do I have a second? All in favor? Any opposed? Thank you. There are various communications listed and on file in the clerk's office that remain available for inspections by those interested. Please just contact the office of the clerk. It's now my honor to... Legislator Kitchen?
Yes.
You're present?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we see you, and we are going to mark you as present. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Now that
Legislator Kitchen, please mute yourself, sir.
Now that Legislator Kitchen has joined us, and he needs to be on video throughout the meeting, but he was recorded as present, so it's 20 present and 3 absent.
Thank you.
There he is.
It's now my honor to grant privilege of the floor to Susan Copenhaver, Director of the Ulster County Office for the Aging. The Ulster County Office for the Aging's mission is to assist and empower older adults and their families to live as independently as possible with dignity and purpose. Joining Ms. Copenhaver is Keith Blair, Vice President of Business Services and Development at Gateway Hudson Valley. Gateway is a nonprofit social service agency that has been providing essential services to people with disabilities, behavioral health needs, and the aging population for over 65 years in the Hudson Valley. Please join us. Yeah, just pop it off.
Hello? Yes. Thank you, Chair Criswell. Can you hear me? Yay. Okay. Wanted to make sure you could. Okay. Oh, I need the thing. Sorry. Don't start the clock yet. Okay. Do I point it?
Anywhere.
Point it anywhere. Okay. So let's see what happens. Oh, nope. That's the wrong way. Okay. Everybody can hear me? Can you hear this? Can you see it? Can you see it? Okay,
nope.
I want to make sure. So, where we are, where we want to go. I have my 4 minutes. Here we go. This is kind of squinchy. I'm sorry about that. But this is the kind of data we collect that we share with our advisory council and anybody else who wants to hear it. And normally during public hearings, which happen every year with the Office for Aging, at least 2 different places throughout the county, we talk about things like how many home-delivered meals we've had and congregate meals, how many hours of service our contracted and our own staff homemakers provide to our clients, how many PERS units we have, out. Our volunteer program, how many rides have we given people over the last month or year? How many rides UCAT? We have a contract with UCAT who takes people to medical appointments and shopping and outings throughout the county. How many HICAP clients? HICAP is our acronym that I can never remember exactly what it is, but it's all the Medicare counseling that we do during the year. Hundreds and hundreds of hours through volunteer work. MIPA submissions, those are for people who have low income who cannot can actually qualify to never have to pay their Part B deductibles again. We help them with that. We have lots of legal clients. We have a growing email client list as our folks go through our tech classes that we offer during the course of the year, and we help them learn. We're now going out into the community, and we're able to offer those tech classes to people in their communities rather than having them come to Kingston if they cannot. We do lunch and learns all year. We teach people about all sorts of things that they need to know about. In addition, we have exercise classes, craft classes, chess club. We have Tai Chi all over the county all the time, at least twice, at least two sites at any given time. We have evidence-based programs that help people avoid and strengthen themselves to avoid falls and visits to the ER. We have six congregate lunch sites, at least one every day throughout the county. We had three picnics this summer, or we will have. We had a senior prom. We have lots of partners who offer us help through the Surrogates Court, Cornell Cooperative Extension, the Alzheimer's Association, just to name a few. We do at least two lunch and learns for most of the year every month. We do preparedness seminars for our older adults. We have lots and lots of general information events, including lots of scams. People are very interested in scams these days. Every year we have two public hearings. They're coming up in October. Both at the Hub and all throughout the county, we have these things. It's not just at the Hub. We are involved in many of the both county and local committees, boards, coalitions, groups that we talk about, and we help them solve problems together with our office. And we have three transportation options for older adults right now. None of them are completely, none of them really satisfy the entire need of the county, but we're working on it. We have about 23 staff. I can never remember how many we have. But important to note that we have over 165 volunteers doing different things out throughout the county and lots of people to help. We have a warm call program. We have a food program, which Keith will talk to you about. Lots of volunteers doing a lot of different things. And future plans, we want to keep talking and teaching people about tech issues. We're calling it Tech on the Road. We have a group respite program. Our first orientation was today to offer caregivers a little bit of a break, and we hope to replicate that in other places in the county. And we, thanks to the legislature last year and the year before, they gave us some positions that we were able to reduce our wait list quite a bit. That's it. Oh,
there we go. Could you introduce Keith, please?
Oh, sure. So I'd like to introduce Keith Blair, who is relatively new with Gateway, but has done a great, wonderful job pulling things together. And he doesn't have a PowerPoint, but he has some things to say about our nutrition program and our relationship together. Thank you, Keith.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me. So as Sue said, thank you, Sue. Can you hear me? All right. So my name is Keith Blair. I'm the Vice President of Business Services and Development at Gateway Hudson Valley. For those of you who are not familiar with Gateway, I'd like to offer a brief introduction. Gateway is a nonprofit social service agency with over 65 years' experience in delivering vital support to individuals with disability, behavioral health needs, and the aging population. Our services extend across Ulster, Dutchess, Columbia, and Greene counties. And we are excited to announce plans for future expansion into Albany County within the next couple years. We provide a range of vocational, residential, and therapeutic programs designed to help individuals achieve gainful employment, secure stable housing, and build meaningful connections with others and their communities. Additionally, we offer commercial cleaning and food services that employ many participants from our vocational programs, giving them valuable work experience and a path to greater independence. Our mission is to support individuals in selecting, acquiring, and maintaining skills and resources they need to achieve success and satisfaction in their lives. We do this through a range of services, including the vocational, therapeutic, residential, and business services. Can everybody hear me okay? Doing okay? Okay. Since 2015, Gateway has provided over 700,000 meals to older adults through Ulster County and has operated 6 community cafes across the region. Each month, in partnership with the Office of Aging, we deliver nearly 6,500 meals and provide another 1,200 meals through cafe sites. Our drivers and cafe site hosts create long-lasting relationships with each of the seniors, providing not only meals, but also meaningful conversations and wellness checks. Because of the extensive time our employees spend with the seniors, they are skilled at recognizing changes in their well-being and can promptly alert OFA or emergency services if needed. This is vital for ensuring our seniors' well-being and creating a support network that offers more than just meal services. The staff, we achieve these results through dedicated efforts of 11 individuals working exclusively on the Senior Nutrition Program. Under the leadership of CIA graduate Diane Reeder, our team is committed to delivering exceptional service to every senior in our care. Diane, some of you may know, has been around for a while. She's a 40-year Hudson Valley resident. With a long history of helping the underserved population, she founded and operated the Queen's Galley, a food insecurity resource center, where they provided 3 hot meals a day, 365 days a year, and distributed over 10,000 meals each month to those in need. Additionally, she played a key role in bringing EBT SNAP benefits to farmers markets across New York State, ensuring widespread access to fresh local produce. Looking ahead, we are eager to collaborate further with the Office of Aging to broaden our services and reach every senior in need. We are currently working together to add more days at various Congress sites to better meet the increasing demand. By enhancing our support, we aim to deliver more hot meals to seniors in need and create enriching social interactions for the entire senior community. I want to express my heartfelt gratitude to everyone who made this program and others like it possible for those in need. Through this partnership between Gateway and the Office of Aging, we are truly making a difference in the lives of those we serve, ensuring that each individual receives the respect and dignity they deserve. Thank you again for your support and dedication.
Thank you so much for that. And thank you, Susan. Thank you both for the work that you're doing in our community. We really appreciate it. At this time, I'd like to move into a period of public comment regarding resolutions on the agenda. I want to remind everyone that you have 2 minutes to speak, and this period is on resolutions before the legislature this evening. We encourage you to speak, and we ask everyone to keep their comments respectful. There will be a time to speak on issues not before the legislature toward the end of the session. If you need a reference to the agenda, we have a QR code available. Clerk Fabella, do we have anyone signed up for the public comment?
We do. We have 3 speakers signed up.
Thank you.
The first speaker this evening is Steve Bush.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. I want to speak about the hotel occupancy tax amendment. I'm a member of Indivisible Ulster and also the Rochester Democratic Committee. Since 2020, the fair market rent of a 2-bedroom apartment has increased by $490 in Ulster County. In the same period, single-family home prices have risen by 47%. These increases far outpace wage growth, leaving the average Hudson Valley family over $150,000 short of being able to buy a home and $28,600 short of renting a 2-bedroom apartment. We also have over 500 people, including many families, who are living in emergency housing, double from a year ago. So this is the way we're going to roll cut our affordable housing budget off at the knees so that people who are able to pay over $1,000 a night can't chip in to the cost of a couple of lattes at the expense of many residents in Ulster County who can't afford housing. I really can't believe this kind of idea was even proposed in the climate of the severe housing crisis that we face. To me, this is unthinkable. It is also discriminatory and bad government policy to pass a law that applies to only two business interests within the broader hotel industry in the county. Will other hotels want to claim non-passive activities as well because they have a pool and an exercise room? As an American, I believe in fairness. This proposal is not fair. Please do not support this legislation. Be on the right side of fairness. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Our second speaker signed up this evening is Dina Turner.
Hi, I live in Sardis. My name is Dina Turner, and I don't have a lot to add to what the gentleman said, except I do think that it's premature to cut this legislation off at the knees. It just took effect in January, and we don't have any data to prove that long-term customers or future customers are going to be deterred by what amounts to, on an $1,000 room, an extra $20. So instead of $20, $40. I can't imagine that that's going to deter people from coming to an all-expense, everything-included resort. I also think that it's sound economic policy for tourists to chip in because they use our essential services. They use our water. They use our fire department. They use our police department. They use EMS, ambulance services. We've long been a vacation land for people coming up from the city. And we've also been an escape hatch when times of turmoil for people that live near enough by to get up here. And I feel that it's only fair that they should chip in for us in the time of a housing crisis. I'm not going to say that all-inclusive resorts are a cause of the housing crisis, but certainly short-term rentals are one of the causes. And I just think that, elderly people are being affected by housing shortages and lack of housing affordability, and that is somewhat caused by the spike in prices caused by tourism and development from the outside. Young people are being affected. Young people can't stay here. They have to leave and go somewhere else. Retirees who might want to downsize can't find anything they can afford. They're having to stay in places where they're paying too much property tax. Couples just starting out aren't able to buy a house because of affordability. And I would just urge the legislature to give this a chance to work. We need the UCAT services. We need more UCAT services. We need the Housing Action Fund to have a chance to have more money in its coffers. We need to be able to control these funds, which we can because they're coming from the county to the county. So I think this is a really important opportunity for us to be able to address our crisis as it is now. So I urge you all to vote no on this.
Thank you.
The last speaker signed up is John Daniel Gilhooley.
Good evening. I'm from Socrates, and I just want to second and third the arguments already made against the carve-out. I think it's premature. There's no evidence that any of these businesses had a deleterious effect, and it's just bad policy. We have a housing crisis. The money was intended for that. There's no reason to undercut it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to speak on issues before the legislature this evening?
Anyone else who would like to speak on issues before the legislature this evening? And a third call? Okay, I'm going to move us on. We are now moving into consent and non-consent agenda. Majority Leader Ushetel, is there anything moving in or out of consent or non-consent?
Chair Criswell, we would like to move Resolution 439 out of consent into non-consent.
Any objections with that, Minority?
None at all.
Thank you. On the consent agenda.
On the consent agenda, we are a short yes.
Short yes with one abstention. Legislator Kovacs, 422 for the purpose of employment.
The resolutions are adopted 20-0 with the exception of Resolution 422, which is adopted 19-0 with one abstention, Legislator Kovacs.
We will now move on to our non-consent agenda.
The first resolution in non-consent is Resolution 168, adopting proposed local law number 1 of 2024, a local law amending Article 3, Hotel and Motel Room Occupancy Tax of the Code of the County of Ulster in relation to determination of taxable rent.
Legislator Nolan for the first time.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion that we send this resolution back to committee. And the reason for that is that there are several members of the legislature that are absent tonight and unable to vote on this. It's a very closely considered issue, and I think it would be best to have the entire legislature vote on this. So I'd like to make a motion that we send this back. In addition, there have been a lot of comments about this resolution coming prematurely. And I think there's information that we can give the public and each other about why this particular amendment to the increase in the occupancy tax might make sense. The occupancy tax has been increased from 2% to 4%. It is generating increased revenue as long as tourism remains at the levels that it has been or going up. There is information that I believe is important for all of us to have that we can gather over the next month and reconsider this issue.
There is a motion on the floor.
I'll second that, sir.
Seconded by Minority Leader Roberts. On that motion?
I'd like to ask for a long roll, unless there's further discussion first.
A long roll on the motion.
On the motion to refer Resolution 168 back to the Economic Development Committee. Collins.
No.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
No.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Guevaras.
No.
Green.
No.
Hanseth.
Yes.
Harmon.
No.
Hewitt. Out of the room. Kitchen.
Yes.
Kovacs.
Yes.
Levine.
Pass.
Litz.
Yes.
Maloney.
I'll be a very disappointed yes, and I think there's been a lot of misinformation put out about this. I actually got an email today from some constituents that are on a large email list from the Democratic Committee in Saugerties who got a call from the executive and asked to fight this because it's going to stop housing, our housing initiatives. You know, I put the original resolution up to double the bed tax. Not a lot of people wanted to be involved with that because of the word tax. I thought it was a way to generate a lot of funds from wealthy out-of-towners, and I didn't think going to a hotel was going to deter anybody. A lot of the counties surrounding us are at 3% and 4% already. So we were going to generate tens of millions of dollars over just a few years. And finally, we got it passed. From the very beginning, I intended on making a couple of businesses fair. We talk about equity and being fair with our tax base, and it is being fair because
They have horseback riding and skiing. We've been through this for years. Water parks, laser tag, musical acts, arcades. The room itself that you stay at one of these all-inclusives, that's two of the biggest employers in the county. You want young people to stay here and get a job? Well, that's one of the places they could. And they're being taxed on all those things just because they don't want to separate out their receipt, because their business model is far more complicated if they have a receipt that has all these things equating a certain amount of money. So they are absolutely, they're probably already being overtaxed, and in this resolution it was to keep them exactly where they are now. So they're going to contribute. We're not losing any money. We're gaining the same amount of money, and then all the other money on the regular hotels, all the other revenue. And to not treat them, and one after another, these all-inclusives go out of business. And to lose them at this point, the last couple we have, would be detrimental to our economy locally. And we are pushing them, and their margins are laser thin. It's just not fair. And the way this has been done, for the executives to start contacting people at the last minute and making people think that they're fighting for housing when there's so much more to this conversation, is sad and indicative of where this county's gone on so many different topics. But here we go, kicking a can down a road again, and treating these businesses very unfairly and overtaxing them, two, three, four times as much as any hotel is being taxed. So I guess I'll be a yes to kick it back to committee and keep this long, which I don't see this going anywhere. The exec is against it for whatever reason. They haven't even given us an accurate amount. They should have those numbers. They say millions. They should have the exact number of what it's going to cost us. And they never give that to us. They just say millions, and this is about housing, that key word, housing. And we get the community riled up like we're hurting housing. No, we're treating two businesses fairly and generating tens of millions of dollars with the original law.
Thank you. And a reminder, everyone, this is on the vote to send this back to committee. Please continue.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
No.
You should tell.
No.
Walls.
Yes.
And Levine. No, he voted already. You're the only one that passed.
I think Kitchen passed.
Kitchen passed.
I heard that as yes. You heard it as yes, too?
It will be yes.
Oh.
Okay.
Because I could barely hear the meeting. But yes, I vote yes.
No.
So the referral back to committee is defeated by a vote of 11 to 8.
On the resolution.
I'll ask for a long roll on this as well.
There's a long roll called on this resolution.
On the adoption of 168, Collins.
What was the vote again? On the
11 to 8?
11 yeses?
Yes. You need 12 to pass something? And we have somebody out of the room, three people absent.
Legislator Collins.
Was that a call to vote, or was that a call for...
If you would like to speak on it, I gave Legislator Maloney the opportunity to speak on it. If you would like a minute, I will give you a minute to speak on this. This is the roll call, correct.
I'm just going to vote no, then.
Thank you.
Yeah. Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
No.
Donaldson.
No.
Gavaris.
No.
Green.
No.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
No.
Hewitt is still not here. Kitchen.
Yes.
You got to be on the, you have to be seen to vote?
Oh, hold on. I hit the wrong.
You are sick. We have to give you a little leeway here. not feeling well.
I can barely hear it. Can you tell me again what this is, the long vote is for?
This is for the adoption of Resolution 168, adopting the occupancy tax changes. Yes. Kovacs?
Yes.
Levine?
No.
Litz?
I'd like to explain my vote. When the occupancy tax was first generated many years ago, I believe it was 1991, there were probably 6 or 8 all-inclusives in the county at that time. And they, at that time, asked to have it reviewed because they thought it was unfair. Because if you go to a Motel 6 or you go somewhere, you're taxed, your room occupancy tax, and that's basically on the room. Maybe they might have a breakfast or something like that. And if you look at the table in the law, depending on what they provide other than the room, the percentage changes. So for years, these people have been paying tax on horseback riding and skiing and all sorts of other things that other hotel establishments were not paying. They're only paying on the room. So when this came up a year or two ago and we started tackling this, they again came to us and said, you know, it's unfair how you're charging us. You're charging us, you're actually double taxing us because, you know, we're providing breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and we pay a tax when we buy the food and all of those things. And then you're taxing us on our room because we provide amenities like that, which is why when we constructed this law, we talked about non-passive amenities that they provide. And you have to provide 5 or more. A hotel that has a pool is not going to get a break. It's not like all these other hotels are going to jump on a bandwagon. Matter of fact, all of those establishments never challenged the law. They paid their fair share because it was based on an occupancy tax of your room supplied to you. So when we re-looked at the law, there were financial statements and all sorts of things that were given to us. I was on a subcommittee to look at this that proved to us that about 18% of what is collected per night is actually the room. The other 82% is all the amenities, the spa, the ice skating rink, the ski slope, the tubing, the jet skis, all of those things that these all-inclusives provide are actually being double and triple taxed, which when you talk about fairness, that's not fair. The other thing, and it was talked about tonight about the housing and how young people can't get housing and whatever. And, well, these people provide jobs. Not only do they provide jobs, they provide housing. Where are the 550 employees going to get an apartment or whatever and then commute to work, which is another cost? If that practice stops, we're going to have 550 more individuals who are looking for affordable housing and will have to pay commute to get to their job, whereas these amenities, these all-inclusives, provide housing at an affordable cost, and the commute distance is literally walking to your job. I don't know why we want to penalize some of the largest, if not largest, economic drivers in this county that provide amenities for everybody in the county from their tax dollars But we're going to penalize them and double and triple tax them because we think it's going to help the housing crisis. But when they take those 550 employees and put them out into the housing market to search for apartments, I think that's not going to help. So I am a yes, and this is only putting everybody at a level playing field, and it is putting them at that field that they have been unjustly taxed since 1991.
He did say yes.
Okay.
I did say yes.
Just making sure. Maloney.
I'll be a yes, and I agree with everything my colleague just said, except for it was not a subcommittee. It was a working group. Those are two very different things. But I think there was another great point made, and that's these are workforce. We throw that word workforce, the term workforce housing around a lot, and people think, well, if it's affordable housing is workforce housing. Really, workforce housing by definition is housing provided by an employer on the property of an employer at a very low cost compared to the market rate. And these are two of the only the two companies that will be most affected if we don't pass this unfairly, I think, are two of the only employers in Ulster County that have real workforce housing. A lot of the things we talk about wanting more of, from economic development to the kinds of jobs to workforce housing, all exist in these companies that are being treated unfairly. And this little carve-out, which we still don't know how, the numbers have been vastly overestimated from what it's actually costing us just to keep it where it's at and be fair about the rate at which people visiting these two places would pay. It's just very disappointing, especially when we talk about economic development and equity in our tax approach and all these different things. That we don't seem to be willing to do this, and it's a real head scratcher for me. I'll be a yes.
McCullough.
No.
Nolan.
No. I agree with Legislator Litz and Legislator Maloney. This inequity in the tax law goes back to 1991. When we were going to pass an occupancy tax, charge extra in addition to sales tax, extra money for people who stayed overnight here. They use extra services. It made some sense. We had a pretty low occupancy tax at 2% relative to the surrounding area and consciously made that part of the tourism initiatives that we brought forward over the past 10 and 20 years. We took sales tax from tourism, which was low in Ulster County, and we've doubled it and tripled it and raised it. And the reason that we have a lot of money for housing and transportation funding in Ulster County right now is because we have been supporting our tourism industry and growing it by leaps and bounds. We're growing it with the film industry, and that we provide a subsidy to the film industry because we know if we get those folks coming, they bring more folks up here. We should be providing that kind of subsidy, and we were by having only a 2% occupancy tax for many years. We just raised it to 4%. All along, there's been this ratio to try to make it fair for people that were providing things other than occupancy. But those numbers were just grabbed out of the air in 1991 and since then. If you provide two meals, you get a slight reduction in the occupancy tax. If you provide three, you get more. And if you provided three meals and one additional activity, then you could get 40% of the occupancy tax, and 60% was considered non-taxable because it was not occupancy, it was meals or other things. In trying to correct this, the working group gathered information about how much of the expenses of these two venues that say that this was unfair to them, what they were actually doing. And what we found was what they said they were providing, about 20% going to lodging, was documented. And so That's what's fair if we're actually charging an occupancy tax. If we're just reaching into their pockets and taking extra money because we think they have it and they can afford it and it won't hurt them, then we'll be able to do this. That's what leading it this way does, is in fact tax them on things that is not lodging. And so that's not fair. And I think it's not smart. I think what we were doing in terms of really trying to grow the tourism economy and get those tax dollars up has been very successful over the past 10 and 15 years. And we're in a place that we have not been previously in terms of being able to fund transportation and housing and greening of all our systems. I applaud the effort to make sure that housing is well taken care of. But by increasing this tax on hundreds and hundreds of venues from 2% to 4%, that's where we generated the extra money for housing and transportation. And yes, we agreed to put some of that back into tourism so that we keep, you know, increasing that number. But to treat these two venues fairly, or any other venue that is offering mostly recreation and just, you know, has a room that they built 150 years ago and no longer have to do anything much but clean it, to tax them on their occupancy is, I think, risk killing the goose that lays the golden egg. These two venues are our flagships, and they are in a business model that is very difficult. We've lost more of our all-inclusives than we actually had. So 4 out of 6 are gone. We would do better if we were having more and more all-inclusives. They don't have all-inclusives all around New York State. It's one of the unique features of the Catskills region. And these business owners tell us that their customers feel it when the bill goes up. The customer only sees the bottom number on their credit card. And if that number is $20 more next month than it was the prior month, they want to know why.
Legislator Nolan, can you ask for time from one of your colleagues if you'd like to continue on?
Thank you very much.
Legislator McCullough.
So what we should do, I think, is find a way to be fair to these venues. If it takes doing it as subsidies for the workforce housing that they're providing, then perhaps we should do that. If we should be subsidizing for the green economy that they are providing, then maybe we should be doing that. Maybe we have to, you know, look for larger subsidies than we would have been dealing with these amounts of funding that we're talking about. But what they asked us for was, please just treat us fairly on this taxation thing. And so I'd like to think we could think clearly about that and maybe come back and look at this issue and see how treating these venues and all of our venues fairly and building our tourism economy actually is the smartest way to support our housing and our transportation and our cultural and our historic and our environmental aims. I am all about that. Thank you.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
No.
You should tell.
I just want to make one quick point, which is that the rate that the all-inclusives pay in tax in that was established was not pulled out of thin air. It was state guidance, state taxation guidance with a chart that shows exactly how much to reduce the amount that's taxed, and they are currently at the lowest level that the state recommends. So this is a state recommendation. It's what we've been doing, and for that reason, I'm going to be voting no.
We're in roll call right now.
And Walls.
Yes.
The resolution is defeated 9-10.
Madam Clerk, I'd like to switch my vote.
I'll switch mine as well.
Oh, Joe.
Madam Clerk, I would like to switch my vote as well.
and Gina. So it is still defeated, but now the vote is 6-13. The next resolution in 9 consent is 394, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to accept funding under the state's Law Enforcement Technology Program, amending the 2024-2029 Capital Improvement Program, establishing Capital Project 702, Ulster County Sheriff.
On the resolution.
On the resolution, we're a short yes with two noes, McCullough and Hewitt.
Short yes.
Legislator Hewitt is back with us, and he is a no, so that resolution is adopted 18-2. The next resolution is a bond resolution 425, authorizing the issuance of $180,000 bonds of the County of Ulster, New York, to pay the cost of improvements to sidewalks, curbs, and stairways at county buildings in and for said county. Collins.
Yes.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Guerreras.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
Yes.
Hewitt.
Yes.
Kitchen. We can't hear you.
Yes.
That was excellent. Thank you. We heard you well. Kovacs.
Yes.
Levine.
Aye.
Litz.
Yes.
Maloney.
Yes.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
Yes.
Uchitel.
Yes.
And Walls.
Yes.
The resolution is adopted 20-0. Resolution 427, also a bond, authorizing the issuance of $75,000 bonds at the County of Ulster, New York, to pay the cost of security improvements at Golden Hill office building and the new Public Works Warehouse facility on 9W West in the town of Ulster, New York, in and for said county. Collins.
Yes.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Guevaras.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
Yes.
Kitchen.
You missed one.
Oh, I did. You know what? You're crossing
yes.
the wires. I'm sorry. That was me. I'm sorry. Hewitt's a yes. Kitchen. I heard you that time. You were
passed. I said passed.
Okay. Kovacs.
Yes.
Levine.
Aye.
Litz.
Yes.
Maloney.
Yes.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
Yes.
Uchitel.
Yes.
Walls.
Yes.
And Kitchen.
Yes.
Okay. The resolution is adopted 20-0. The next resolution was pulled from consent. It's 439. And that's amending the 2024-2029 Capital Improvement Program, establishing Capital Project Number 704, Golden Hill Solar Project, amending the 2024 Capital Fund Budget, Department of Planning.
On the resolution?
On the resolution, we are short yes with one no.
Yeah, I'll be in it. Look, from the very beginning.
Legislator Maloney, I call on you.
Thank you. Just explaining my no vote quickly. I've been unhappy with the deal with the billion-dollar developer over there at Golden Hill. I think they should have far more skin in the game, and this is part of that skin that they don't have in the game, and we're paying for even more, and it's a billion-dollar developer. We talk about all the money we need and all the things we want to do, and we enrich these developers that then don't end up paying taxes, and I think in the long run, if we continue doing this, it'll be an unsustainable situation with regards to school taxes.
We are a short yes with one no, Legislator Maloney.
Short yes.
The resolution is adopted 19-1. Resolution 443, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 9, of 2024, a local law providing real property tax exemption of the county portion of the real property taxation and special ad valorem levies for the creation of new accessory dwelling units in accordance with New York State real property tax law to be held on Tuesday, September 17, 2024 at 7 p.m.
On the resolution. Oh, I'd yes. Like move, Majority Leader, you should tell.
I move to adopt the amendments as presented.
Second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
On the move to adopt.
On the move to adopt.
Short, yes.
So correct.
On the move to adopt the amendment.
On the amendment.
Yeah, on the move to adopt the amendment.
On the amendment.
Yeah.
Correct. On the amendment, yes.
Short, yes, on the amendment.
Thank you.
The amendments are adopted 20-0.
And on the resolution as amended.
On the resolution
I'm
as
sorry.
Amended.
Legislator Letts.
Oh, I'd like to speak on this.
Yes, sir.
I've gotten feedback from several of the supervisor of the towns, and they really would not like to see this pass, especially since, in my own opinion, we're reducing tax that could be used towards housing. We're giving a tax break to people that might be, you know, renting it out, make a little extra money, and we're going to give them a tax break. But the people that generate the most tax money, we just told them, sorry, you got to pay more tax. So I'm going to vote no, but it doesn't make a difference. But, we talk out of two sides of our face. In one instance, we don't want to hurt housing. We don't want to hurt housing. And in this instance, where I don't know how much tax this is going to be reducing by. I mean, the one town told me he has 100 units in his town, and those people are going to be unfairly paying their full tax when other people are going to have 100, 25, and 10% reduction over 10 or 15 years. It's just not fair, and we could use that tax money for affordable and working affordable housing. Why are we not collecting this tax?
Thank you, and I do want to remind everybody that we are voting on setting a public hearing right now. Legislator Collins.
I just want to point out that this exemption is for those people who build affordable dwelling units and then rent them at an affordable rate. Many towns have a zoning code that allow affordable dwelling units to be, or accessory dwelling units to be built. They're not being built because they're too expensive to build. This gives the owners a tax break, an incentive to build them, rent them for a while as an affordable unit, and then rent them after that as a market unit. Market price units. So it will encourage affordable housing. That's the intention of it, is to encourage affordable housing. It will do so by giving owners the incentive to build more housing.
Thank you. Legislator Maloney.
I'd like to explain my no vote. And overall, I just feel as though this housing word, housing, and I think there's got to be a sustainability conversation with regards to how much housing we're going to subsidize. I keep wondering why we don't want to take a deeper dive into the housing crisis before we try to solve it just by subsidizing anyone that has anything to do with anything called housing. Look at New York City. Where do they get their drinking water? Where do they get their food? Where do they incarcerate? Where do they get their electricity? Where do they get their more tax dollars than they produced? What do they do with their solid waste? The answer is all suburban and rural areas. So cities are completely unsustainable by definition. And if we ourselves become a city, where are we getting our drinking water? Where are we getting our food? Where are we going to incarcerate? Where are we getting our electricity? Where are we sending our solid waste? Our population's going down. We're building houses and apartment complexes everywhere. And yet there's still nowhere to live. I think the communities that are a little more thoughtful and strategic, not just throwing money at anyone that has their hand out that says housing. And I know nobody else wants to say it because they'll be called a xenophobe or a racist, but obviously 5,000 to 10,000 people a day coming across our southern border live somewhere. So if we're going to have an honest conversation, it's short-term rentals and it's migration that is causing this housing crisis. And if we're not going to deal with the two causes, and all we're going to do is throw tax dollars at subsidizing housing, well, in a couple of years, we'll be out of money and in real, real deep trouble. And I'm brave enough to say it. I have young children. I want this country to sustain. I want this community and this county to sustain and be here and thrive. And the decisions we're making are very short-sighted. And when you look at the long-term effects, it won't work. It just won't work.
Legislator Litz for the second time.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with my colleague. In reading the law, it doesn't stipulate affordable housing or workforce housing. I think we should send this back to committee and add those words into the law for you to be eligible for this tax credit, that it be for affordable or workforce housing.
Minority Leader Roberts.
I'll second that motion to move it back to committee.
So we are voting on a public hearing right now. We are not voting on the resolution itself. I'm just going to get clarification from council, please.
Yes.
Okay, so we can make a motion to refer the resolution to set a public hearing back to committee. That is what we're voting on right now.
Right, and that is proper, because if we do not send it back to committee and it goes to public hearing and we make substantive changes to the law, then we got to go through a process again. So
I just wanted to clarify where we were at. We were going a little bit around circles. Okay, council is telling me we actually only need one public hearing. It doesn't. Regardless of the changes.
Whether if they're substantive, you can?
Correct.
Wow.
Correct. So okay. Be that as it may, there is a motion to send this resolution, which is setting a public hearing on local law number 9, back to its committee. That motion is on the table. Is there a second for that?
Yep, a second to it, Roberts.
Minority Leader Roberts. Okay, Legislator Nolan and then Legislator Collins.
Just a point of clarification.
On the motion.
Yes, but in order to know whether this is necessary, can we get a confirmation from council that the law as written does not have any inclusion of requirements for affordability in the first part of the – for a time period?
Please hold. While we're holding, Legislator Collins, please.
Whether it does or not currently, I will make sure that I put an amendment forward to make sure that it guarantees affordability housing after the public hearing. I think we can do the public hearing. We can make the amendment. As a council has said, we do not need to have a second public hearing even with that change. I believe that we're all agreed that if it has an affordable housing component, that it should be passed. So let's get this moving through the public hearing. Thank you.
So, Legislator Maloney, I guess you want just one second. So hearing that argument, Legislator Litz, do you still want to have this motion to send it back to its committee?
Well, I find it difficult to make motions on what may happen or not happen, and if it's not in black and white in here, I feel more comfortable voting on something that is tangible, written in front of me, rather than I'll do that later. Maybe it wasn't what you wanted, but I did it anyway.
Okay, so you want to hold firm on that, correct? I saw Legislator Maloney, and this is on the motion, and then Legislator Kovacs, please.
Yeah, I just, on that last statement there, that we'll make sure it's in there, it would be, there would be an enforcement aspect of it. Somebody would have to have a responsibility of making sure that the rents were where we stipulated they would be. And then afterwards, if that doesn't happen, what happens then? So it's a little more complicated than just putting the language in, because the language means nothing if there's not a logistical enforcement explanation accompanied with the language of where we want the numbers to be on what the rents would be.
Council actually just highlighted something that there is actually enforcement that's listed in there, and it's a penal law violation, and that is listed in section J of the
and
law.
Who in our county would that be? The sheriff's department, the DA, weights and measures?
District attorney's office.
Are they aware that this would be a responsibility of theirs?
I don't know if we know that answer.
Okay.
They're aware of the law, though. So, Legislator Kovacs.
I just want to add that this is really implementing a state real property tax law, and I don't know, I would request counsel to weigh in on this, if we can add provisions mandating that these accessory dwelling units be used for affordable housing. I don't know if we have the authority to do that. So yeah. I would, and I don't need an answer right now, but I do believe we need an answer at some point, hopefully before we vote to adopt
the preemption
law.
Council will look into that, and we'll get back to you on that. Majority Leader, you should tell.
So this is my understanding of this is a state law that we are opting into. We cannot legislate. Trust me, I've tried to legislate housing that is the type of thing that the state would want to legislate, and we are preempted. This is a state law. I'm looking at the law right here, the part that we can talk about, that we can make changes to. It says right here the legislative intent in the first sentence says affordable housing. The rest of it just opts into the state law. It makes very clear that if you rent it to as an Airbnb, the tax exemption ceases. The point of this at the state level was to spur the creation of affordable housing. We can either opt into it or we can choose to not opt into it. And I pray that we will set in motion the process of opting into it tonight by setting this public hearing.
Okay, so there was a motion and a second. And can we vote on that motion? So on the motion to refer back. Majority Leader Yushto.
I'm going to call for a long roll.
On the motion to refer Resolution 443 back to Ways and Means, is that the committee we're going to with? Could be Ways and Means, Laws and Rules. Laws and Rules. On the motion, it could be whatever you make it, but you got to pick a committee.
So Legislator Litz, you made the motion to refer it back to committee. What committee are you suggesting it be referred back to?
Well, let's see. Well, the Housing Committee really isn't a standing committee. It is a committee.
It is a standing committee.
Please continue. I would send it to Ways and Means, I guess.
Okay. So
on the motion to refer Resolution 443 back to Ways and Means, Collins.
I'm going to vote no, and I'll explain it quickly. My understanding now, given Legislator Yushtel's explanation, is that what I want is already there. So there's no need to change it. Let's get this moving. Let's get the public hearing done. Thank you.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
I'm going to vote no. I always vote yes on having public hearings. I believe that it's important to get the public's input on anything we do.
Donaldson.
No.
Gavaris.
No.
Green.
No.
Hanset.
Yes.
Harmon.
No.
Hewitt.
No.
Kitchen.
Yes.
Kovacs.
Yeah, I'm voting yes, only because I'd like to have a definitive ruling by council as to whether we can really amend the law. I understand the intent here is to promote housing. That is clear. But whether we can add provisions requiring affordable housing rates for these ADUs is unclear, and I don't believe we can. I don't believe we can make modifications to the enforcement provisions of state law. But I would like to hear from council on that. So I vote yes.
Levine.
No.
Litz.
I still don't see anything that makes it definitively for affordable housing. It's not in the resolve. It's not in any of the language here. Outside of the fact of a preamble that says, hey, Ulster County needs affordable housing. And as far as what we have the rights to do, the state law is it allows accessory dwellings. This law is a little more prescriptive in that it says we will give a tax break of the county tax on these units. But I mean, most people are going to put finish their basement off or put a, you know, above their garage and put a dwelling unit, and they're going to want to rent it for a good price because it's going to offset their expenses, their land taxes, and all of those good things. And I honestly believe without black and white stipulating that the only people eligible to get this tax abatement from the county are those units that are affordable and workforce housing is the only way you're going to be able to enforce it and actually keep a handle on who gets the exemption, who gets an approval on their application or not. Because, I mean, rents out there are unbelievable. I mean, they could put a little, a two-bedroom above their garage and rent it for $1,800 a month. And they'll get it, too, because, unfortunately, there's not enough housing. But that's not the intent of this law. The intent, what I believe, speaking from what I heard from my colleagues, is we want more affordable and more workforce housing in this county so we can retain young people. Older people can downsize and move into something they can afford. This, the way it's written, I don't think accomplishes that at all. And I'll be voting yes to send it back to committee.
Maloney.
Yeah, I'll be a yes, and I would love to have the DA's office come in to that Ways and Means meeting and explain to us how they're going to enforce. I mean, how are they going to enforce? They're going to be going out there. All I ever hear is they're short-staffed and don't have enough personnel as it is with their workload, especially with all the new laws. And now we got them going out and making sure everybody that adds a bathroom to their basement and isn't paying county taxes for years is in compliance, or we're going to claw back. I mean, none of that is going to happen. And I don't think the DA would be prepared, nor should they really be prepared at this time to even tell us how they would go about doing that. So it is a trust. We're giving away a lot of tax dollars with trust. And on top of it, I think there should be a little more language in there about a mansion compared to a two-bedroom house. You could throw a bathroom in a basement of a $10 million mansion and get a huge amount of county tax breaks with no one really checking in on it if you're even renting it out or not. So I think there's holes here. I think there's enough questions to send it back to committee and get some of these answers and work towards it. So I'll be a yes to send back to committee. I do think I would have preferred it go back to laws and rules. It's a much shorter agenda usually. Ways and Means is usually we're just trying to get through it in 3 hours. So laws and rules, and it is a lot of legal questions. So I think laws and rules probably would have been a better committee, but I do think it's worth sending it back.
McCullough.
No.
Nolan. I think that these questions are really important. I think that there is the practical information that accessory dwelling units, as they have been used in the past decade or so, have in fact been generally affordable units. They often are relatives
And they often allow a slight increase in density with very little increase in services. So my understanding of the law as I read it was that the intent was to go in this direction. If we are able to put new language in that would help us keep to affordability in those units over time, I think that would be smart. Because even if right now they are generally used in an affordable way, it could be that they would become a source of major income, and then I don't think there should be a tax break for that. You know, if the person's getting enough income, then that tax money can be shared with the county. But if this is a family member or somebody who needs housing and isn't able to afford other housing and can be accommodated, which is what I understand the current usage to be, then that does seem something that we should support. And a tax reduction based on that makes sense to me. So given that we can make some of those changes or not after a public hearing, as well as if we sent this back to committee, I'm going to be a no on sending it back to committee, but ask that the sponsors and the relevant committees, including laws and rules and housing, look at this as well as receive comments from the public about how we could improve this.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
No.
You should tell?
No.
And Walls.
Yes.
The referral is defeated, 8 yeses, 12 noes.
So now on the resolution itself.
On the resolution, we're a short yes with 1 no. Legislator Maloney.
I believe we're going to be a short yes with 2 noes, Legislator Litz and myself.
The resolution is adopted, 17-3. The next 3 and final resolutions are bond resolutions. The first one is Resolution 449, authorizing the issuance of $2,602,441 bonds of the County of Ulster, New York, to pay the cost of the Burroughs Hall windows replacements in and for said county. Collins.
Yes.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Gavaris.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
Yes.
Hewitt.
Yes.
Kitchen.
Yes.
You're like a pro now.
I can't hear too well. The audio is really bad, so.
No, you're good. You're doing good now. Kovacs.
Yes.
Levine.
Yes.
Litz.
Yes.
Maloney.
Yes.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
Yes.
Uchitel.
Yes.
Walls.
Yes.
And Kitchen.
Yes.
The resolution is adopted, 20-0. Resolution 451, authorizing the design, testing, and construction phase services for Borough Hall roof and HVAC improvements in and for the County of Ulster, New York, at a maximum estimated cost of $6,820,884, and authorizing the issuance of the same. Collins.
Yes.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson. Gavaris.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
Yes.
Hewitt.
Yes.
Kitchen.
Yes.
Kovacs.
Yes.
Levine.
Yes.
Litz.
Yes.
Maloney.
Yes.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
Yes.
Uchitel.
Yes.
Walls.
Yes.
And Kitchen.
He said yes.
He said yes. I heard it as passed that time.
I said yes.
Got it. Resolution is adopted, 20-0. The last resolution is Resolution 453, authorizing the issuance of $1,068,936 bonds of the County of Ulster, New York, to pay the cost of the installation and construction of the Vanderlyn Hall main entry and vestibule doorways in and for said county. Collins.
Yes.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Gavaris.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon?
Yes.
Hewitt?
Yes.
Kitchen?
Yes.
See, that was questionable. Yes. It's questionable.
That was yes.
Kovacs?
Yes.
Levine?
Yes.
Litz?
Yes.
Maloney?
Yes.
McCullough?
Yes.
Nolan?
Yes.
Roberts?
Yes.
Sperry?
Yes.
Uchitel?
Yes.
And Walz?
Yes.
The resolution is adopted 20-0.
We now move to the public comment on matters not currently before the legislature. I just want to remind everyone that you have 2 minutes to speak, and this period is on issues not before the legislature this evening. We encourage you to speak, and we ask everyone to keep their comments respectful. Clerk Fabella, do we have anybody signed up for this?
No.
Is there anybody present who would like to speak on issues not before the legislature this evening? Anybody like to speak? And a third call. Seeing none, I call on Vice Chair Megan Sperry to read the names of community members who have recently passed.
Thank you. Tonight's meeting is adjourned. I don't have this verbiage. I'm just improvising here. I don't know what happened. So I'm just adjourning the meeting in memory of Susan Lee Stewart of Amarillo, Texas, Barbara Parody of Stone Ridge, Marie Coletta of Milton, John Panic of Highland, Janet Canino of Highland, Magdalena Toth Ivick of Poughkeepsie, Vivian Marie Longtoe of Kingston, Mary Elizabeth Polacco of Kingston, Beatrice Teresa Ronchezzi of Highland, Alicia M. Hegman of Highland, Brian Anthony Douglas of Highland, Howard Jules Geffner of Highland, Peter R. Minkler of Highland, Catherine Wajio, sorry, Kingston, Frank J. Sarley of Milton. I also want to acknowledge Susan Lee Stewart of Amarillo, Texas. She is our colleague, Legislator Eric Stewart's mom. We're very sorry for your loss, Legislator Stewart. Also, Barbara Parody of Stone Ridge. She is the mother of Marbletown Supervisor and former Legislator Rich Parody and one of our DPW Deputy Commissioners and former Legislator Robert Parody. She also leaves behind her husband, former legislator and legislature chair, John Parody, just shy of their 60th wedding anniversary, as well as daughter Patty and son John. The long lines at Barbara's wake and standing room only attendance at her funeral are testaments to her legacy and the lasting impact she and her family have made on the community. I also would like to note that many in this room have lost parents and loved ones. It's not easy, it is hard, and it hurts, but those losses remind us that life is truly fragile. Each day is a gift. What we do with the time we are given is up to us, so cherish your people every day and act with kindness to those you meet. You never know the grief that someone may be suffering from.
Thank you. Legislator Green?
Yes, Rosendale lost two members of our community, Robert Ryan, who I had the honor of serving on the town board with. He was very active in the American Legion and also gave a lot back to the community. And also John Rawl passed this month. Some of you may know that John bought the railroad that includes the rail trestle over the Roundout Creek for a dollar and proposed bungee jumping, which the town felt was unsafe. So that never happened, but it is now part of the Walk Hill Valley Rail Trail. And he's well known in Rosendale and will be missed. Thank you.
Majority Leader Uchitel.
Thank you. I wanted to read something that our colleague, Legislator Stewart, provided about his mother. Susan Stewart of Amarillo, Texas, mother of Legislator Eric Stewart, died unexpectedly earlier this month following knee replacement surgery. She was a graduate of the University of New Mexico and had a long career as an educator, teaching English and special education in public elementary schools. Later, she became a school librarian and loved being surrounded by children and books.
She is survived by her husband of 54 years, her son, and his husband, Dr. Michael Sharon, and five nieces and nephews. Eric last saw her when she visited Ulster County in May for Mother's Day, a visit which now carries special meaning. She was a smart, kind woman who is greatly missed and warmly remembered by those who knew her.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan.
Yes, I just wanted to add a word about Barbara Parity, who lived in Stone Ridge with her family, but who co-ran and cooked for the Boyceville Inn out in Boyceville. And that's the place that for decades, I think 50 decades, has nourished our community out in the western part of Ulster County and been a site for nonprofits to meet and political parties to meet and lots of ideas to be brought forward. But amidst all of it, Barbara Parity was taking care of us all, and I just greatly appreciate her for that.
Thank you. As we draw our session to a close, I'd like to share some personal reflections with you. Just a week ago, on August 13th, I celebrated my 60th birthday. This milestone has given me pause to reflect deeply on the journey of life and the road ahead. I found myself contemplating the many facets of long-range living, my home, my health, my support networks, and my finances. But beyond these practical considerations, I've been pondering bigger questions about purpose and meaning. These reflections feel particularly timely as we approach National Senior Citizens Day on August 21st. In our role as legislators, we hold a profound duty to support our older constituents. In Ulster County, our seniors face numerous challenges that we must address. Many struggle with affordable and accessible housing, which is critical for their stability and well-being. Access to health care is another pressing issue, as many seniors find it difficult to obtain the medical care they need. Transportation is a significant barrier, limiting their ability to maintain independence and stay connected with the community. Social isolation is prevalent, contributing to mental health issues and a decreased quality of life. Financial insecurity remains a constant worry for many, complicating their ability to manage daily expenses and plan for the future. End-of-life preparations, too, are often neglected, leaving many seniors without the support they need during their final years. It's incumbent upon us to not only provide physical support to our seniors, but also to create opportunities for dignity, connection, and meaning in their lives. As we think about our policies and programs, let us remember the words of the poet Mary Oliver, who wrote, "Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?" This question is not only for the young, but for all of us at every stage of life. Our older citizens still have so much to give, so many stories to tell, and dreams to realize. Let us commit to building a community where our seniors are not just supported, but celebrated. Let us ensure they have the resources to live fully and the opportunities to continue contributing their wisdom and experience to our society. Thank you, and let us all work together to advocate for our senior citizens with compassion, respect, and understanding. The next regular meeting of the Ulster County Legislature will be held on Tuesday, September 17th, 2024, at 7 p.m. in the Legislative Chambers, 6th floor, Ulster County Office Building, 244 Fair Street, Kingston, New York. Resolution deadline is Wednesday, August 21st, 2024. I'd like to ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
And is there a second? All in favor? Meeting adjourned.